It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, it's true. We are off and running on yet another live program here at the Horn on this, the 12th day of December, 2018. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to click on chat room and jump into the Madcap Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live. If you do so, you will be met and greeted by the likes of Anatole and Otto and VT Blom. And, well, I am your humble moderator for the evening so far. So we're going to settle in and have a darn fine time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. We got lots of good prayer meeting material to go into here in fairly short order. Yeah, real good stuff. Real good stuff. We've also got real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, actual news to dissect. And based on a conversation I was having earlier today, a little bit of perhaps procedural stuff and history stuff relating to what might happen if a president decides he's got to take it on the lam. Yep. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot on both streams, Brother Bob. Grab him by his holy name. Ha! Oh. Really? 2 minutes into the program and we're headed for the gutter already? It happens. It happens. Of course, at the beginning of every program, we have thanks to send out. Thanks to our subscribers this evening. To wit, Mark, thank you very kindly, Mark. Thank you to Angelica for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thanks to Gary for his subscription. Thank you very kindly. And thank you to Christopher as well. Thank you very kindly. Our subscribers get thanked at the beginning of the program. Because their subscriptions roll in during non-program hours. So thank you to all of our subscribers. Someday, hopefully, you'll have lots more subscribers to join you. And maybe, you know, like I've been saying for the last couple of months, if we added a new subscriber every day between now and the end of this time next year, I wouldn't have to talk about fundraising anymore, and that would be magnificent. But as it is, thank you very kindly to Joy from Ann Arbor for jumping in on Robert's challenge last night toward the end of the program. That's going to remain on the table this evening simply because I got to it so late in the program, people didn't have a chance to respond. So thank you very kindly to Joy. Joy takes Robert's challenge down to only $55, And here's another piece of good news. Gary and Gaia out in Oregon have put forward a $50 prayer meeting Wednesday challenge. So once the plate goes around, if it comes back with $50 in it, Gary and Gaia will match that. And if it comes back with another $55 in it, on top of that, and they'll be passing the plate throughout the program, then Robert's challenge will be met. And all of that will net out quite nicely. Because as best I can figure it, we finished last night at 4:02, and once the challenge from Robert's met, that'll be 2:02, and the challenge from Gary would be 1:02, plus tonight's plus tonight's the usual $200 goal, and we're at 302. So if all the challenges get met, we'll only have 302, and we will have taken a little bite out of things, just so you can know. Well, let's see. What are we working on right now? Well, I was made aware of another bill, about $200. One got paid, so we're looking at six. And then if I have some crazy notion, like, say, to go get cheap blood work done, have a doctor's appointment, $800 out there just floating around. Right. But as it stands, if we can meet those challenges, then we'll have only 302 to go, and that's a lot easier to manage than much larger numbers. But, yes, as Joy in Ann Arbor noted, from Joy in Ann Arbor, Brer Pantload says, please don't throw me in the impeachment patch with the Republican Senate. Oh, that's yeah, there's plenty to talk about there because, well, the walls closed in a little bit more today, didn't they, on Julius Geyser. It's probably getting a little close and a little hot there in the toga of Chlamydia Claudius. Yeah. And we'll get to all of that. But brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And that means we have to take in stories of great faith in action. And because that's what we do on prayer meeting Wednesday. You know, Bible study, prayer meeting, looking at the miraculous works of the Lord, that sort of thing. Yeah. And with that in mind, you know, what it boils down to is the little smoker in the backyard here is basically the test kitchen for the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall kitchen. And when the little old blue-haired ladies heard about the rousing success with the pork loin, they insisted we have pork loin on the menu for prayer meeting Wednesday this evening. So me and the little old blue-haired men went out and fired up the Cathedral of Common Sense smokers, and we'd brined the stuff back starting Monday and seasoned them and everything. So the faithful in attendance for fellowship dinner got treated to, yes, that magnificent, you know, Yule-esque, fruit-filled, brandied. Yes, we allowed, the little old blue-haired ladies told me I could even use the brandy if I poured the brandy off the fruit later and left it in a mason jar where they could get at it. So we have some very, very happy little old blue-haired ladies this evening. Yes, indeed. And along, of course, there was the fruit that went with the... So the little old blue-haired ladies thought a nice little fruit salad would be refreshing to go along with it, with that weird sort of sweet kind of dressing that they make, and I don't know what goes into it. So there was the pork loin, and there was the fruit salad, and they decided that the pork loin should be served over a mash of savory winter root vegetables. So there were mashed turnips and parsnips and rutabagas to go with the pork loin. Now here's a little secret. Well, okay, and then the dessert, they just whipped up a few of those four layer pies that are so easy and so delicious, and the deacons went right through that like through a goose. But here's the thing: I told you the deacons were going to be moving through the congregation all this evening. That's because, well, I put an extra helping of prunes in the pork loin that we served to the deacons. It'll have them moving. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You gotta keep the deacons on their toes. So, as it stands, thank you... Oh, and in addition to our subscribers, thank you very kindly to Paul. Like I said, with the subscriptions, they've been rolling in at weird hours, and that one just did roll in. Thank you very kindly to Paul for his subscription as well. So also, you know, we had a magnificent prayer meeting Wednesday fellowship hall dinner. And yes, the deacons did what the deacons do. They trundled their massive pork-filled selves up that couple of flights of stairs, and they went out into the parking lot where they set up to smoking with the sinners. And they hotboxed a few. And then eventually, as is always the case, Sister Carol Baker appeared at the door, the vestibule door, with the horn solar-powered cattle prod in hand. The deacons saw it. They put wings to heel. They blew past her. Well, they trundled past her, not P-A-S-T-O-R, P-A-S-T-H-E-R, past that desiccating bowl of buttermints, and they came on down front. They're waiting here now, got the heavy brass-bound, velvet-lined plates in hand with the little PayPal button in the bottom, and they're about to pass it around the room as we go to the offertory hymn. Now, make sure, with every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, make sure that you don't get whacked in the noggin with one of them plates, because it can knock you senseless. And this is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and we don't want no senseless people in the Cathedral of Common Sense. So just scrunch one eye open, take the plate, push the button, pass it, and we'll see how things go at the end of the offertory hymn. But for the time being, brethren and sistren, please give your attention to the Minister of Music. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, what's up, Ralston on the Rilla Raw and the Brawler Brawler Suet? I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, and help glory to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I am Archpope Uber Rabbi, Ultimate E-Bomb, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Ponerized Pontiff, Munificent Mufti Bob Kincaid, and I'm calling on you to get up off of your seats and onto your feet. Wiggle and waggle and waddle as you come out from the pews. Move without rhythm so you won't, glory, attract the worms. And come on down and fall upon your knees, upon your knees. Amen. Brethren and sistren, and lay your hands upon the subwoofer at the altar and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren, and I tell you what, you know, sometimes we listen to the offertory hymn, we do, and we think that maybe that might be just a little tiddly bit over the top, especially the part about the ATMs and all of that. Right. Well, brethren and sisters, I'm here to tell you it is not over the top. No siree. No indeedly doodly. Uh-uh. Because I have here a great tale of love and faith. Down in South Carolina, stand, brethren and sistren, they got a gospel shop there called the Relentless Church. Relentless. And the preacher there is a fella by the name of John Gray. And he's been married for 8 years to his beloved spouse, Pastor Gray has. And his beloved spouse is a woman by the name of Aventer Gray, A-V-E-N-T-E-R Gray. And in celebrating their wedding anniversary, brethren and sistren, because ain't God good? Well, he put a post up on the social media. It looks to be maybe Instagram or some such, about how they celebrated this humble pastor and his beloved spouse, how they celebrated their 8th wedding anniversary. Now, you might recall that in traditional in anniversary traditions, the first year you're married, you're supposed to give paper as an anniversary gift. The second year, cotton. The third year, leather. The fourth year, brethren and sistren, you give fruit and flowers or linen and silk. The fifth year, you give wood. Told you, headed for the gutter right away. The sixth year is iron or candy. The seventh year is wool or copper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Well, there's nothing on here for the 8th year. It skips from the 7th year to the 9th year. How about that? Well, that explains Pastor John Gray's gift to his wife for their 8th wedding anniversary, namely a Lamborghini. That's what it is. 5th year wood, 6th year iron candy, 7th year wool copper, 8th year Lamborghini, 9th year pottery, 10th year tin aluminum. Right. 8th year Lamborghini. A Lamborghini Urus, U-R-U-S. I'm just going to have a look at it. Yeah, that's your sort of crossover SUV-ish Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It comes in at a cool $200,000, according to the folks over at Christian Post. And he described his 8th wedding anniversary gift to Aventer Gray as 8 years, new beginnings, new hope, new life, and for her, a new whip. No, really. The pastor referred to as an automobile as a whip. Pastor Gray. What aren't you telling us, brother? I put a faith deposit down in February, and God helped me to make my wife's dream come true. Why not? She's made mine come true. Hashtag God is my witness. Hashtag book contract. Hashtag haters be blessed. And then it didn't. People began kind of not responding positively to it. So Pastor Gray pulled his post. But said, I will never apologize for how hard we work and how we want to bless each other. That's what his wife said, Aventer Gray. She gave hubby for their 8th anniversary, because remember that was blank there in that list I was looking at, 7th to 9th. Well, for her, 8th anniversary was Rolex. And because she's clever that way, since it was the 8th anniversary, it was an $8,000 Rolex. Mm-hmm. We'll replace our hymns with ATMs. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Yep, no hungry folks there at the Relentless Church. No homeless folks there at the Relentless Church. Nope. Just a brand new Lamborghini, or whip, as John Gray refers to it, in the driveway. And a $8,000 Rolex watch on his wrist. Yep. Well, I mean, they do. They work hard. They probably got a kick-ass band, and every Sunday he has to talk for an hour. Yeah. Somehow, and maybe it's just me, I just can't imagine. I don't. It's not a matter of imagining. I have never found that verse. In the Gospels, where Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who didn't have two shekels to rub together, said, take up thy Lamborghini and follow me, but be careful of the time and check it often on your $8,000 fucking Rolex. But hey, Pastor Gray said, haters be blessed. So, well, bless his heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Special, huh? Oh, very. Very, very. But there's much more than that out there. Hey, let's check in with one of my favorite gospel sharps, Jesse Lee Peterson. Tracy was rather taken aback by Jesse Lee last week. Tracy, hockey puck. Just saying. And everybody else, hockey puck. Because after it, everybody couldn't help noticing at the funeral of George H.W. Bush that everybody else was reciting the Apostolic Creed, but somehow or another, Julius Geezer was unable or unwilling. Well, that's the kind of thing you have to defend, and thank God that Jesse Lee Peterson is right there to do the defending.
According to Mediac, Trump... Kate Flack for failing to recite Apostles' Creed at Bush's funeral.
Kind of sounds like he's having trouble. Gets dark early now. And probably has the straw in the Maker's Mark bottle. I imagine a few more of those are empty now than were back when he was sitting before. Takes flack for not reciting apostle. Well, wait. just hold on, bite down real good on that hockey puck.
I got to admit, this is the first time I ever heard of Apostles' Creed. This is why another reason I say Christianity is fake now. It's all intellectual.
Christianity is fake now. It's all intellectual. Because nothing says fake like people who think. Ooh-wee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is some good stuff. I've never heard of that. But then again, look, I'm not going to hold that against it because I hadn't heard of it either because I was raised Southern Baptist. And we don't go in for such flummery and foppery like that. Well, that's true. That's true. Brother Deacon Asa says, now listen here, Pastor Kincaid. A $200,000 Lambo is Bush League. The Gulfstream 5 that Kenneth Copeland bought earlier this year cost $54 million. Why won't you let a brother be generous to his lady, to his baby mama? Well, it's pretty obvious that Pastor Gray is really good, and he's got the ambition. So I'm sure there's a Gulfstream. If he doesn't already have one, there's a Gulfstream 5 on the list somewhere. I mean, sure. I know. Arthur says, well, you can't expect the poor lady to be seen in public with a $7,000 Rolex, Bob. Hasn't she suffered enough humiliation in her life? One time she had to reuse a porcelain plate washed by the help instead of getting a fresh one for her gold leaf-covered chocolate cake. Chocolate cake.
It's not from the heart anymore. I've never heard of Apostles' Creed. What in the world is that? Who made that up?
Well, that's the guy who fought Rocky. Apostle Creed, right? No?
That's not a Christian thing to be reciting. It's a phony act. There's this guy, a so-called Bishop Michael Curry. And Michael is a phony bishop. He led the reading of the Apostles' Creed. But Trump and his wife, Melania, aren't reading alone. Watch this. Listen.
I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. I believe in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord. He was conceived by the power of the Holy Spirit and born of the Virgin Mary. He suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried. He descended to the dead. On the third day, he rose again. He ascended into heaven and is seated at the right hand of the Father.
That's all mess. That ain't got nothing to do with nothing. No wonder President Trump didn't read that.
Ain't got nothing to do with nothing. That's all mess. Mm-hmm. You know, all that business about him being born of a virgin and descending into hell. And that's no Jesus that Jesse Lee knows. No, no, sir. No way. No. Well, that's up to you. Marty says, Jesse Lee, is rum required? Well, Jesse Lee prefers bourbon, but you know how that goes. Steve in New York says, let me guess, the Apostles' Creed ain't Christian, and why Trump didn't say it. Given its 1700-year age, does that mean Christianity's been so intellectual for 1700 years? Well, kind of, yeah. Yeah, and the funny thing is, it's not intellectual at all. It's a ritualistic statement that was crafted so that practitioners of the faith who weren't particularly literate could at least understand the mean some modicum of the meaning of the liturgy, because we have to also understand that there wasn't a, the priestly class clung tenaciously to the right to be the only people who did any real Bible reading. Some of the most fascinating aspects of the development of the English language, and in fact of publishing, have to do with people who put their very lives on the line, their heads on the block or in the noose, or, you know, in the fire, as it were, simply by publishing a Bible in a language that the lay people could read. The heart and soul of the Protestant Reformation was that people were going to be personally accountable to the Creator, and that they would have a relationship directly with God without the intercessory activity of a priest. That people would be literally responsible for their own salvation. I knew I'd hear from Tracy. Subject line, Jesus fucking Christ. Isn't it a bit too early in the show for Uncle Tom Coonery? Oh my God, his head is so far up Trump's ass that he can do a colonoscopy. But, you know, it's all intellectual now. I guess Jesse Lee. So here's the part that we don't have. So if it wasn't intellectual, and if it was just a big old Holy Ghost revival, would he expect that Donald Trump in his suit and Melania in her gown or whatever she was, I don't know, probably has Velcro tearaway strips on it. Would they be down on the floor rolling around and speaking in tongues and swigging strychnine and passing the snakes back and forth and whatnot and getting the oil poured over their head? Can you imagine what would happen if an evangelical walked up to Donald J. Trump and said, President Trump, you're a great president, and you're MAGA, man, MAGA, 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 but we're going to have to anoint your head with oil.
You're going to do what to my head? No. Do you have any idea how long it takes this to get this one hair to stay put? You ain't putting nothing.
No, but King David.
Fuck King David. He was probably balder than I am or something. Or he had hair that would respond well to hot oil treatments. Nobody's putting any oil on my head.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. It's all fake. Intellectual. That's a new one. Intellectual Christianity. I've been around it for most of my 55 years, and I haven't found any intellectual Christianity yet. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, Pastor Gray and Aventer are getting under people's skin here. Les with a note. Hold up. She got a $200,000 car, and all he got was a lousy 8K watch? He's not a pulpit pimp. He's a pulpit simp. P.S. And fuck Uncle Ruckus. Oh, I know. So, that was all fake. Sure. You betcha. And just because the goddess of an irony doesn't... Megan wants to know, subject line, Jesse Lee's lisp. Does Jesse Lee stuff his mouth with cotton before he speaks, or is it snuff? Or does he imbibe before channeling the Holy Spirit? Well, you know, when you're pouring it in, when you're not even pouring it in shot glasses, but just taking it straight out of the bottle through the straw, that ain't channeling the Holy Spirit. That's guzzling them. That's all I can say, Megan. But because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, we get Dave Dobenmeyer. Now, this he writ this down. He didn't talk it, sadly. He wrote something over at a weird-ass evangelical site called Barb Wire. Get it? Yeah, crown of the barb. Yep, right. Me neither. No, he said, in an effort to promote his little thing, well, not that little thing, those who join the show believe that Christian testosterone is a good thing. Yes, yes, that's right, friends and neighbors. Why, men, are you feeling a little poorly out there? Well, why rely on plain old garden variety testosterone, or God forbid, pagan testosterone, when you could have Christian testosterone. As Dave Daubenmeyer says, those who join the show believe that Christian testosterone is a good thing. That is something that is sorely missing from the girly men filling most of America's pulpits. If you're sick of milquetoast Christianity, we invite you to join our capital H huddle. If you're sick and tired of weak-kneed Christianity, you need a show that's full of Christian testosterone. You know, I think there's enough Christian testosterone out there already if the church scandals are any metric of it. You know what I mean? Yeah, right. You know, we have some new members of Congress coming in, and some of them, a couple of them, are downright Muslim. Ooh, this does not sit well with E.W. Jackson, as Flush Flimball likes to pronounce the name. That's very much true. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out Christian testosterone is code for toxic masculinity. And toxic it is. And I'm sure E.W. Jackson is plenty masculine. And that's why he can be so upset about, you know, the Muslims in the Congress.
Folks, I'm still trying to get over this whole issue of Nancy Pelosi allowing these women, this Muslim women, and apparently other women in Congress are now going to start, if this movement takes root, are going to start wearing the hijab on the floor of Congress.
Man, he says hijab with a real panache, doesn't he? A hijab! Hijab! Hee-haw! Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Wait till somebody tells him what they're going to take the oath of office on.
So what are we now going to do? We're going to turn Congress into an institution of Sharia law?
No.
I mean, folks, this stuff is just crazy. Let me shake that. I mean, that's...
Yeah, don't shake anything, E-Dub. Or if you're going to shake something, make sure it's your own. The rest of us don't need shook. Not even a little bit. Crazy. Crazy.
Oh boy. Lord help us.
Hey, give me some input here. Do I need, because, you know, we got this noisy-ass fan going in the background. Sometimes you can hear the trucks going by on the road outside. Do I need to do everything now with some sort of electronic music bed? Or a permanent banjo loop or something like that? Would that improve the program? It seems to be what all the,
it's good enough for E.W. Jackson.
I'm E.W. Jackson, your host.
See?
Here on Urban Family Talk. The number's 866-963-2037. I would love to hear from you. What do you think?
Urban Family Talk. Yes.
Think about that, as a matter of fact. Apparently a bunch of women right now, they're planning to wear hijabs.
Hijabs. Hijabs. Truck driver, coal miner, hijabs, plumber. Then there's your shijabs. No.
In honor of this newly elected woman who is a Muslim, in order to recognize and support her and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, this is also in part going to be, what is this woman's name? Omar. Representative-elect Omar. I'll get her full name in a second, but yeah, well, the floor of Congress is now going to look like a, it's going to look like in Islamic Republic. I mean, really? Man. You know, we are a Judeo-Christian country.
We aren't.
A nation rooted and grounded in Christianity.
That's a lie.
And that's that.
A lie.
And if anybody doesn't like that, go live somewhere else.
Well, dumbass, it's not a question of whether or not one goes and lives somewhere else. It's a question of whether or not we are, which we aren't. Just a gentle reminder, how about the Treaty of Tripoli, executed during the administration of John Adams, that contains the words, the United States is in no wise a Christian nation. I mean, there's that. Then there's the Constitution statement that there shall be no religious test for the holding of office. There's that. There's the whole First Amendment that says that religion and government do not mix well and should not mix at all. Oh, by the way, just while we're on the topic, turns out that it wasn't just the National Rifle Association that Maria Butina helped to infiltrate. It was also the National Prayer Breakfast. Yes, all those good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexual Christians getting together and channeling their inner Pharisee once a year or twice a year. I don't know how often they hold that damn thing. She was instrumental in trying to get some Russian tentacles into the National Prayer Breakfast because, well, you know, Pootie's such a Southern Baptist.
It's very simple, right? Just go live somewhere else. Don't try to change our country into some sort of Islamic Republic or try to base our country on Sharia law.
You know, if they ever did do that, I might be a little bit upset about it because of, well, what I said a minute ago, First Amendment. Because that would be as improper an intrusion of religion into government as Christianity or any other, right? Subject line, two Muslim women. Steve in New York says, don't you know that both of those women constitute a majority so they can pass Sharia? Oh, I know. Beekeeper suits for everyone.
And that is not an Islamophobic statement. I'm not afraid of Islam. I don't agree with Islam. But that aside, this...
Yeah, but that aside, what he wants is Christian theocracy, not Islamic theocracy. But he likes his theocracy.
This is a Judeo-Christian country. This is a country that's rooted and grounded and based on the...
You know, no matter how many times he says it, it never becomes true.
The Old and New Testament scriptures. That's the root, that's the foundation, that's the basis...
And that's a lie.
...for the existence of this constitutional republic. And we're not allowing Sharia law to become the basis of our culture, our laws, or anything else. I'm serious about that. We're just not going to have it. We're simply not going to have it. Let me just say this to you. And I didn't intend to get into this, but that's what happens when you play spots like that. And I'm listening, waiting to do my program, and I hear that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Look, folks.
Happens to me all the time.
The threat to humanity is not merely radical Islam. The threat to humanity is Islam, period.
You know, and that's how the genocides get started, saying that a particular ethnic group or a particular religious group is the threat to humanity. You know what's a real threat to humanity? Climate change, yep. Great big humongous ice sheets breaking off into the ocean and bobbing around, raising sea level by inches and feet, massive droughts, tinderwood fire traps, monster tropical storms and hurricanes and unheard of levels of human displacement and migration. That's the threat to humanity. Somebody hollering Aloha snack bar is not. At best, things like ISIS are an annoyance. hell at the absolute height and peak of their powers. They couldn't get past the gates of Vienna. Europe had to fight back like a holy terror, but then again, Europe's always been kind of good at that. You know, your Vlad Tepiches and your El Cids and right, Charles Martel, But it was never a threat to humanity. Never.
That's right. I said it and I mean it. That doesn't mean that I believe that every Muslim is a terrorist or that every Muslim is dangerous or that every Muslim would hurt somebody. I've told you all before, I have Muslims in my family. I love them. They're wonderful people.
Some of his best friends are Muslims.
I believe that they would defend me with their lives. I really believe that. I'm talking about Islam as a system, as not only a religious, but also a political system. That system is dangerous and it is a threat to freedom. Period. Now, you can call that Islamophobia all you want, but read the Quran and read the...
You know what's a threat to freedom? Being dead. Like a bunch of, like, little Muslim Yemeni children that we're assisting the Saudis in slaughtering. That's a threat to freedom, death. Yeah. Kind of hard to be free if you're showing up for a wedding reception in Helmand province in Afghanistan and some joystick jockey hellfire missiles your wedding reception. Yeah, not a lot of freedom going on there unless you're looking, if you're talking, eternal peace and all of that, but no. Your slaughter is the real threat to freedom. Steve in New York says, the real threat to humanity is the communist plot to sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids. That's right, Mandrake. I discovered it one night after the act of love. And you'll notice now I never drink anything but rainwater and pure grain alcohol. What's your commie drink, Mandrake? Vodka, right? Right. Fluoride, Mandrake. Fluoride. In little children's ice cream. Mm-hmm. I can no longer sit by and watch communist infiltration. Communist obfuscation. Communist aggression. Sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids. Steve gets it.
Life of Muhammad, and you tell me what you think. I mean, come on. Let's just deal with facts and deal with truth and deal with reality and stop playing these politically correct games. Islam was birthed by a warlord who beheaded 800 Jews, I think, in the city of Medina.
Wonder how many Muslims the Christian crusaders killed when they took Jerusalem. To be fair, they were indiscriminate. They slaughtered Jews and Muslims alike till the streets just ran with blood. Probably more than 800, I'd say. That's the thing, though. You start getting into who killed whom, and who, then it never ends. But this guy would like to have himself a little holy war and set up a theocracy here in America where we'd all have to believe just like he does. Jefferson Starship wrote a song about that once or something. If only you'd believe like I believe, baby, we'd get by. Yeah, that's what that was. E.W. Jackson, theocrat. Mm-hmm. Wowzer. And, well, we're getting closer and closer to the 2020 presidential campaign. So, naturally, the white wing and the religion industry are going to have to start refixating, as if they ever didn't, on, you know, her, Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And so it was that Tom Horn, no relation, over on something called Skywatch TV, explained to everybody just who Hillary Clinton is. Oh, sure, you all laughed when I used to turn on the reverb and say, "The devil!" Well, who's laughing now?
This was very connected to the 2016 run-up to the election with Hillary Clinton. The WikiLeaks revealed that there were occultists around her who believed that she was actually the fulfillment of those experiments in the desert called the Babylon Working, where the founder of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and actually the founder of the Church of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, they get together, they're conducting the Babylon Working, ritual sex magic, for one purpose, to bring through a dimension.
You know, if ritual sex magic isn't a new band by, say, the next 24 hours, well, there's just something horribly wrong with the world.
Veil into our reality, the archetype divine feminine, the whore of Babylon, right? Yeah. To incarnate it within a female that he believed would grow up. He wrote about it in his biography. She'll grow up. She'll become an influential, worldwide known feminist who will help give rise to the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. They believed that that was Hillary Clinton. In one of the other programs, maybe we can get into all the details about why that is so. And the importance of that that's been announced now, that Hillary Clinton is very likely going to run for president again. In 2020. But guess what? In 2020, she will be 72 years old. This is one of the most, again, one of the most important occult markers.
Really? 72? I always thought 3 was big, and 7 come 11. 72? Let's do listen more.
And it's going to again cause the occultists around her to believe that she is the incarnation of that entity, which, by the way, 1 year after this child was supposedly born in 1947, the year Hillary Clinton was born, another reason they believe she is, Jack Parsons wrote a book called Book of the Antichrist. And in that book, he says that this one-year-old child now, the spirit of it came to him in a vision, said, "I'm alive, I'm on the earth, I'm doing well, I'm going to grow up and help the Antichrist come to power. And oh, by the way, my name." This is in one line of the book.
Wait a minute. She's going to grow up and help the Antichrist come to power? Wouldn't that make the Antichrist MAGA?
Book of Antichrist, written in 1948. My name is Hilarion, which is the arcane Hillary.
Yes.
So you have to ask yourself, why the occultists around her believe that? Well, mathematically, who...
Actually, no, dumbass. Hilarion is Greek, and it would apparently, from the ending, it sounds as though it would be masculine. So, no, it's not the... No, it isn't. Jesus, these people. But... at least, you know, if you're listening to this program, you've got a leg up on what to expect as we move forward. Hillary Clinton will be 72. Oh, goddamn. So will Al Gore. By the way, note coming in from Tracy. I know. Uh-oh. You're killing me! Exclamation point. Bob! Exclamation point. Uh-oh. I'm vexing Tracy. Where are you finding these Kool-Aid swilling, self-loathing Negroes? I'm never going to get home if I have to keep pulling over to send you messages. Would you please refrain from more than one house Negro per show? My psyche can only take so much, if not for me, but for my fellow motorists' safety, so I don't cause a 12-car pileup because I've lost it listening to these fools. Well, we've got a veritable triumvirate this evening. We've got Pastor Gray, and we've got Jesse Lee Peterson and E.W. Jackson. Sorry, I guess we were kind of front heavy on the. Yeah, I'll make a note of it, Tracy, and I'll try to be a little bit more considerate next time. It remind me before the next prayer meeting Wednesday, would you? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh, well, how do you not just immediately go to an email that the subject line is, wait a satanic minute. Isn't L. Ron dead? How the fuck do you combine Scientology with Christianity and sex magic? Isn't that kind of an oxymoron? Well, yeah, it's that, and emphasis on the word moron, Ron. I know. Thing is, I don't know any... I mean, I know witches who voted for Hillary. But I don't know any of them who think that she's the... Or even secretly or privately, you know, psst, by the way, Hillary, you know, whore of Babylon. Because they don't take kindly to that whole whore of Babylon talk in the first place. But, well, any opportunity for any evangelical white winger to call Hillary Clinton a whore. And, of course, that over on the far left fringe of our side of the aisle, they're going, yeah, she's 72. She's going to be 72, definitely 72. She's going to be 72 in the driveway. Aunt Lee in New York. Bob, stop pointing out facts that these religious people don't know. You could go on all night. Oh, I know. Ritual sex magic. I don't know what it is, but it might be interesting to find out. Oh, very much so. The note coming from Cynthia. Hi, Bob. Hi, Cynthia. Well, I gather Jesus was conceived by Immaculate Conception, so I wonder how God did it. What do you think, missionary style? Nah, I bet he did it like a dog. Signed, Cynthia, P.S. I know I'm going to hell. Straight to it. Well, you wouldn't want to go to heaven if it's got Jerry Falwell in it now, would you? Oh, wait. Cowbell for Steve. Urethra! He exclaimed. Now we know what the sex clams are for. Damn Skippy. It's for the ritual sex magic. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Three bags full. Oh, prayer meeting Wednesday. But it's not all. Well, I mean, let's give the white hustlers a chance too. Remember Gary Bauer? Yeah, Gary Bauer has declared that the Mueller investigation, which is meeting with considerable success, a basic injustice. Bauer claiming no evidence that the Mueller investigation's zeroing in on the president and key people around him. No evidence whatsoever. That's why Michael Cohen was sentenced to 3 years in the clink today. Which he was. That's why Paul Manafort's pled guilty. That's why Michael Flynn, Rick Gates, pled guilty. And George Papadopoulos. And, in fact, that's why the American Media Inc., AMI, parent company of the National Enquirer, that's why they reached a deal with Mueller's team today. and agreed to fully cooperate in exchange for the corporation not being prosecuted for its role in the dirty business of paying off one of Donald Trump's sexual liaisons. Mm-hmm. Yep, nobody's zeroing in on the president. Key people around him. Nobody. Mm-mm, no. Except that they, you know, are. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana. Bob, that's just evangelical ciphering. They hate sex and they hate thought. It just figures that 72 is evil. It's the act of 69 with three fingers up your ass. Oh! Yeah, right in the gutter. But you'll have that. You'll have that. So we are an hour into the program now. And we are still looking for $105 to match challenges. 55 remaining from Roberts in Australia last night. And 50 courtesy of Gary and Gaia in Oregon. The plates will keep passing. Please don't let these challenges go by the boards. Please. Just saying. The button's over at headon.live. Yeah, that's true. Steve from New York points out, hey, I thought Julius Geezer was 72. Wasn't he 72 when he was elected? Well, that doesn't count because he's a guy, so he can't be a whore of Babylon. But Steve points out, I took pride in the fact that my adopted church, the Roman Catholic Church, was the whore of Babylon. Yeah, there's always going to be some evangelical coming along wanting somebody else to be the whore of Babylon instead. You know, until it's convenient to make the Roman Catholic Church the whore of Babylon again. That's just how that works. Okay, I'll read that after the program. A primer. Ron in Raleigh says, I think you need to read this, FYI. Wikipedia's entry on sex magic. P.S. There are some crazy-ass folks out there being paid big money to spew this bullshit. And by the way, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, but maybe we'll just be transitioning a little bit now. Speaking of crazy-ass bullshit, the magnificent basketball player Stephen Curry announced recently that he does not believe, there's that toxic, dangerous word again, he does not believe that human beings went, and particularly American human beings, went to the, you know, moon. But now he says that he is open to meeting with NASA so that they can show him that, yes, we did. Oh, my aching back. See, this is what happened when Nixon essentially killed Wernher von Braun's dream of an ongoing space program that would use the moon as a stepping stone to Mars. So instead we got the space shuttle and it just zips around the planet a little bit. And you've got an entire generation of people who, you know, were not particularly touched by the space program. And so consequently, Stephen Curry can say, well, I don't believe we went to the moon. Nope. I know. Just, well, wow. So here at 4 minutes past the hour, just so she's got a fighting chance to get home and not cause that 12 car pileup on the 6 and 7/8. Tracy, get it out of your system, sister.
Oh, my fucking God. This is some unmitigated bullshit. I cannot believe. I mean, not one, not two, but three ignorant Negroes? I mean, come on. Here's the sad and scary
part.
I
didn't plan it that way. Now, let's not make it sound like I was,
I know you didn't plan it that way. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and you got to get out the pulpit pimps. Howsomever, it's just what's killing me and scaring me is the fact that I guess it's a good thing. I had never heard of these people, especially like, you know, Jesse Lee. I didn't hear of him until last week. And then these other two fools. It's just like, come on, players. Really? I mean, if bad enough that, you know.
You know what? You could do some world class cab driving in a Lamborghini Urus.
Dude, seriously.
Hell, I bet there's even a Lamborghini garage in Los Angeles, California.
Oh God, yeah, of course. It's like, come on. I mean, I do live in L.A., so you know.
Where is dude gonna get his wife Avocado's Lamborghini worked on in South Carolina? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. Come on now. I mean, maybe in South Carolina. Ah, you gotta call Todd and ask him that. Did he just text me? Yes, he did.
Oh, just give up, Todd. And call in on the stress line, and I'll tie it all together.
Definitely wants you in a bad way. Oh my God! You know what? He is not right. Not right. Not right. Not right.
No.
Oh my God! It's just when I mean, it is so hard to listen to this shit. I mean. Like I said, it's bad enough that the black church has already got, you know, a reputation as is. But to hear these hucksters, from the $200,000 car to this Negro with the Sharia law and my brother with the list. Now, in Jesse Lee's defense, you know, Jesse Lee was born with a cleft palate that he did not get fixed until he was older. So that may have explained why he speaks the way he does. Oh yeah, I feel like.
Yeah, but it ain't got shit to do why he thinks the way he does.
No, not at all. No. I'm just giving him a little. I'm just trying to give the brother a little help. But you know, other than that,
that's damn Christian of you.
You know, and I am a Christian, and I try to be a damn good one when I can. But it's like, God. It is so hard to have that forgiveness and, you know, and openness and willing to be understanding and all this when you are constantly barraged with this bullshit. I mean, between them, what you played earlier and the Sarah Sanders bullshit, I know that's not prayer. Well, actually, she does need prayer for that. You know, because she is in some serious denial. What did she say? She wants people to remember her as what? As transparent and what? Wait, what was it?
Yeah, no, that was one of those kick the monitor moments. Sarah Sanders hopes people remember her as being transparent and honest. Well, I'd say
and
that.
Honest.
That ship sailed.
Bitch, that ship sailed when you got up this morning, when you woke up this morning. I mean, that is one of those, it's like, when you hear people talk like, you know, like the hucksters, and she's a huckster too, you know, Sarah Sanders, Sarah Huckabee Sanders or whatever. It is so infuriating. It's just mind-boggling how these people can't even face themselves. How can you look in the mirror when you are just heaping piles of dung, just steaming? It is just, oh my God, I can't with these people. It is just, it makes my head hurt. It really does. Because I try. You know, like I try to not get myself worked up, especially when I'm driving. And I try to, you know, a lot of the stuff that when I'm listening to you on my, you know, on my travels home and whatnot, on my journey home, a lot of it is just, it is self-soothing. It's like, you know, you're there's a balm in Iliad, you know, you soothe my soul. And then what do? You throw shit like this at me. And I'm like, God damn it. Just, my God. But it's cool. I'm okay now. It's just, see, here's the thing. I come to you to you know, reinforce my feelings, you know, for the, you know, all my white people gone wild bullshit. I come to your show for that. To, you know, to make sure to reinforce that I know that a lot of these motherfuckers are crazy. And it's not just me that I'm picking on white people because, see, you're white and you're pointing this shit out. So, you know, I'm just listening to you talk about your own folks, right?
Right. I mean, and we are.
Right. But it's just so hard for me to hear. I'm like, I've never heard so many black fools on your show in one sitting. It was hard for me, Bob, because it's like, you know, black folks, we are usually so unfairly maligned. And then I'm like, but this is rightfully so. These people are idiots. It's just, you know, it's just so hard for me to hear this. Because I'm like, God damn it. It's like, come on. Can we be good? Can we not end up on Bob's show? Can we not be so stupid that we end up on Bob's show? That's what
kills me. Wait a minute. Is this like the other night when you created rocks? Are you establishing a new standard here? Please don't do something stupid enough to show up on the horn.
Right. I already have to deal with the shit in mainstream media. I already have to do this. It's already there. I'm just, you know, I come to your show for a safe haven. But now they have the stupidity has now infiltrated yourself, and I don't know what to do. It's just, can we again? You got to stay up. You know.
I'm loathe to suggest alcohol and mind altering drugs, but it's always worked for me, Tracy.
Well, you know, and I'm getting to that point where, you know, I don't come home and drink every night, and actually, very rarely do I come home and drink, but every so often I have to get the gin and tonic out and say, what the entire fuck? You know, and where Scott with my life? Well, since, you know, like I said, I had to hand in my black card because, you know, drink a gin and tonic with the twist of line. But then, you know, I sent you this clip of, you know, Snoop Dogg, you know, with gin and juice. So, you know. So as long as I listen to him singing Gin and Juice.
I want to be clear about something, though. You sent me Target Tammy.
Yes, I did. Yes. Well, that, you know, because, see, I just started, since I've been sending you stuff, I subscribe to the Root newsletter. And for those of you who don't know, you know, and it's not the Root. The band, it's The Root, and it's a black newsletter with, you know, everything possibly that's important in black culture, news, politics, culture, you know, beauty, all that sort of stuff. It's a wonderful news source because a lot of the stuff that I sent you, I find them on The Root. But when I saw Target Tammy, I mean, this is, see, like I said, in our messages back and forth, it's like I have been accosted on many occasions by white people saying stupid shit to me because, you know, they're white and they're privileged and they feel that they can say these things to me, but never have they been memorialized on video. Thank God. Well, no, it might lend to some really good entertainment. But I will always come across as an angry black woman, but rightfully so. But enlighten our Horn family about who Target Tammy is, Bob, shall you?
Oh, I'll do my best. I'm trying to get the audio to load. For some reason or another, it doesn't seem to want to. Let me try it in another browser here. Three women were who happened to be African American women were discussing hats, H-A-T-S, a hat in particular, in Target. And one of them said, see if I've got this right. Try on this hat. It'll make you look, it looks like the hat that Eartha Kitt's character wore
in
the film Boomerang.
And for those of you who do not know what Boomerang is, Boomerang is a movie starring Eddie Murphy where he played an ad exec, and Eartha Kitt was one of their clients, and Eartha Kitt played Eartha Kitt, just being her sexy, wonderful self, but she liked to have sex with younger men, and she was after Eddie Murphy. And this is how she would always say his name, Marcus. You have to see. Have you ever seen Boomerang, Bob?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You did
so
that.
You
did that surprisingly well.
This makes Mark. So, and Eddie Murphy was, you know, kind of creeped out by the whole situation.
And so, well, and so one of the women says, "No, I don't want to look like Eartha Kitt because she, you know, she had sex in Boomerang because she had, you know, illicit sex or whatever it is."
No, she had sex. She liked having sex with younger men, and she didn't want to be put in that category.
So, all of which is a complete.
That was it.
That's all. That's all it is. But along, you know, with her buggy, along comes Target Tammy.
Target Tammy.
A white lady in a NASA shirt. A NASA shirt. That's kind of what I was like, huh? Isn't that supposed to be a MAGA shirt?
MAGA shirt, exactly.
And decides to inject herself into this private conversation among three people and tell them what they were talking about, even though what she's telling them they were talking about wasn't, well, I'm just going to roll the clip, okay?
Please roll.
Talking about in public.
We were having a conversation.
We were having a conversation. What did we say?
This is going to be on Twitter,
exactly.
Y'all don't
good. Exactly. Good. What did we say?
No, I'll just say it.
Please repeat what we said.
What did we say?
You were talking about sex in public.
What exactly did we say?
Because that's how you acted.
What exactly did we say?
I mean, that's what you
screamed out loud. I said that you were having sex in public.
No, that is not what we said.
Where is your hearing aid today, honey? Because you're not hearing real good.
I said, Tara, try this on because this looks like something Eartha said. I don't want to be compared to Eartha Kitt because she had sex.
I just don't understand this is what you guys
that's
do.
What I'm asking. No, that's what I'm asking. What
this woman any longer, please. I want us to stop engaging
well, come
with this
on.
Woman.
Let's stop.
Let's have finished this with the hat.
Let's stop engaging with her, please.
I love her. Just it's not disgust. It's just weariness. Just, I want to stop engaging with this woman. Please.
I'm just tired. Just like I said, it's exhausting.
And just so people know, we're 47 seconds into the clip, and it goes on for 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
2 minutes.
And Target Tammy won't let up. And so when a Target employee finally came over, you know, the story's got a happy ending because they didn't roust the three innocent black ladies or shoot them or anything. So, you know. Happy
right.
ending.
The cops weren't called.
But you know, even as they walked away from Target Tammy, she was still going full victim on that poor human being that worked at Target.
Right.
So, you know, I want to give a little bit of props to Target for apparently having trained their employees to deal with the Target Tammys of the world.
To diffuse that, you know, that could have turned out to be a really ugly situation. But, you know, she injected herself into a private conversation. And then when they weren't, you know, she didn't get the, you know, what is they called? What did she call them? Trained block? What is she?
Oh, yeah, I guess. I guess. Yeah, wait. We got to run the clip that far.
This time.
Thank you.
That's
very clear. I understand you're an abuser. I understand you're abusive.
Stop.
I understand you're abusive and you make up lies on the spot. I understand.
I understand.
Don't call me abusive. Name call me. Keep telling me. I'm ignorant. Keep telling me. I'm going to write. Should I write it down?
This is
called microaggression. All the negative things that you guys have said about me already in our interaction?
No, she's the microaggression.
Personal attacks. I didn't realize that personal attacks were normal. I also didn't realize that talking about sex in public was normal. I didn't realize all these things.
Stop talking, Chad.
Oh, there it was. It's kind of hard to hear, but maybe you should have some sex.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, you'll have to go back and check the clip out. But, yeah, it's about maybe 1:23. One of the women said, maybe you should have some sex.
So you'll know what, you know, so you'll know what you're talking about, because apparently just saying the word sex is talking about discussing having sex in public. Just saying the word sex, you know. And
by the way, kudos to the guy who wrote the story, Jay Connor.
Oh, he's amazing.
Over at The Root. Let's see.
What did he say? Mayonnaise with malaise or something like that?
Apparently, the antagonistic alabastress overheard the word sex. You don't belong here, privileged Peggy howled. You were talking about sex in public. And then, let's, yeah, what there was, I got to find the mayonnaise reference. It was early on that.
I screamed when I saw the mayonnaise,
Mayonnaise mayhem.
My cousin and I were visiting
my best friend from out of state, and we stopped by Target to buy a phone charger. One of the victims of Target Tammy's mayonnaise mayhem told Yahoo. I told my friend to try on a hat that looked like something Eartha Kitt's character would wear in the film, and she said no because her character had sex with a younger man. And that's when all of that happened. But Jay Connor writes with his tongue firmly in his cheek. His opening paragraph: I don't know if you've ever had the privilege of meeting a black person, but outside of ensuring that we remain moisturized at all times, one of our favorite pastimes is discussing black movies. I was down for the count with remain moisturized at all times. Yeah, he had me at moisturized.
Well, because that's one of those things, like, you know, when Jan and I first got together, my wonderful white wife, that understanding why, you know, I have to put on lotion as soon as I get out the shower. And that is an all day affair for me because, you know, black skin and ashy. And I had to explain to her what ashy was. You had to explain
ashy to me one night.
Yes. And then she realized that she's like, well, white people get ashy too. I'm like, yes, but it's not obvious.
But you can't see it.
White on white. You can't see it. As soon as my ankles get ashy, everybody knows. I mean, it's like
Wait, Ashy ankles. Oh, we got another. God, there go there. You know, that should be a modern retro funk band.
Yeah. Those should be ashy ass ankles. A-A-A, ashy ass ankles. Because let me tell you, nothing worse than getting all slicked and you know, your hair fried, dyed, and laid to the side, and you looking all cute, and you didn't lotion up for at least part of the day, so you think. And then you get outside and you look down, or somebody calls attention to the fact that your ankles are ashy, and that's the moment when you have no lotion, so you're walking around trying hurriedly to find somebody with some lotion, you know, the black person care package.
Anything, stick of margarine, anything.
Something, some Crisco, whatever the case may be, Lord Jesus, because I cannot be walking around with my ashy ankles.
Ashy ass ankles.
as she asked, and goes, as a matter of fact, I didn't get to really read the whole article, but on the route, apparently they had a big party earlier this year, about a week or two ago, and it was like the top 100 black people that are making a difference in this country. And I guess it was a big, huge party, and I, you know, one of those. And so apparently somebody came the next day, I guess a little hungover, and they wrote, this is what happens when you walk into the Root offices with ashy ankles. There was a whole article about it.
Oh, by the way, well, I just had a note from Arnold who says, I spit out my water when you said margarine.
Look, shit, back in the day, we had to use Crisco, and that ain't no joke. You know, we fortunately, we got better stuff now with shea butter and cocoa butter and, you know, coconut oil that, and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that corn shuckers lotion won't work, will it? I mean, that's just too thin.
No. I mean, like I said, I keep, there was a comedian, a few years back when they imposed that, you know, you couldn't bring, you know, full-size toiletries and stuff onto planes and you check on luggage. You have to, I mean, your carry-on luggage. And he's like, see, that's that was a definite affront to black people to keep us down because there ain't no way that a black person can travel with travel size, you know, first of all, most of the stuff that I use don't come in travel size, for one thing. So I constantly have to check my luggage just for my lotion.
Right, because it takes more than 3 ounces.
Yes. You know, and if, you know, with 3 ounces, you know, I would be filling up my suitcase, my carry-on would be full of stuff just for, you know, just for my lotion. And that's, you know, it will be too big. So it's like, I just have to carry. I have to, you know, no matter where I go, even if it's just for a couple of days, in a normal situation, I could just do carry-on luggage. But because, you know, the ankles and the hip, oh, my God, no, I can't. No. Like you said, 3 ounces of lotion,
that ain't going to get you to the next airport.
That is not going to cover my pinky toe. Okay. So, you know, that's, like I said, this is a conspiracy against, you know, the TSA is a conspiracy against black people. The further evidence of the man keeping a black person down, because now we got to spend extra money just to check our damn luggage. So we, you know, we don't walk around on our vacation ashy as fuck. I'm just saying it's, I'm telling you. But, yeah, no.
But to be fair, though, and I think she's probably hearing me right now, the lovely Agnes. Agnes is not quite as, but almost as pale as me. You know, redheaded,
oh, wow.
Green-eyed. But she loves her some lotion, too. I just want to make sure that we're not getting overly broad. Because even if she can't be seen to be ashy, she can feel it, and she doesn't like feeling it.
No, and back to like the brother was talking about how, you know, black folks love talking about our black movies because it's not like there's a lot of them, but it's so funny because my best friend and I, Sarah, we pretty much every conversation. It doesn't matter what we're talking about, somehow, like, you know, how somehow on the show there's always the obligatory, you know. Star Trek reference.
Yeah.
So Sarah and I is the color purple. And we, no matter what we're talking about, somehow the color purple, you know, we'll be talking about it. It's like, you show is ugly. Or...
God, that's such a brutal line. In it.
Right. Or my, you know, like Lawrence Fishburne is like, don't do it, Miss Seeley, no! And it's like, that's pretty much whenever we're watching something, and it's like, no, Miss Seeley, no! And that's usually, oh, no, Tracy, no! Or no, Sarah, no! You know, the things that you just, you know, that we have worked and weaved into our lives because, you know, black people. Oh, speaking of black people, I don't know if anybody watches watches Black-ish, but last night's show, at the end of the show, the whole premise of the show last night was supporting black movies. And just so happens that the black movie that they were supporting, that they tried to support, was a horrible black movie. And it was like, just because it's black, you should, you know, doesn't mean you have to support it, you know, out of obligation or black guilt. So, you know, the whole, you know, because it was kind of, you know, the movie, it was supposed to be about Rosa Parks, and it turned into a white savior movie that, you know, basically that it was Rosa Parks' boss's idea for her to sit on the bus, stuff like that. But anyway, so they resolved the situation, and so they decided that from now on, the day after Christmas will be, you know, pick a black movie. And you got to love how Lawrence Fishburne gave himself his own shout-out, because they were naming different black movies, you know, to watch. And he screams out, Cornbread Earl and Me. And I don't know if anybody's, have you ever heard of that movie?
I've heard of it. I can't place it, but.
Well, that was like one of, that movie was like when Lawrence Fishburne, it was one of Lawrence Fishburne's first movies. He was maybe 10 or 11 years old, or 12 maybe, when he made that movie. And I mean, that's when he was not Lawrence, but Larry Fishburne. But when he gave himself that own shout out, I'm like, oh, and it's an amazing movie. It's about this young kid growing up in the hood, and actually it's about a police shooting. The young man's best friend's name is Cornbread Earl, and he's an amazing black basketball player.
Oh, wait a minute, you started something. This apparently is a thing. Because I just got a message from Hung Like Jesus, all caps. Cooley High.
Yes, Cooley High. They said Cooley High. They said Cooley High. They said Cornbread Earl and Me, and all these other. It was just amazing. Just, you know, the hurricane. Just all these, you know, black movies that a lot of people, unless you're black, you've never heard of these movies, or you've heard of them, like you said, in passing, but you've never seen them. But Cooley High is another. This was like, you know, the exact opposite, the polar opposite of the black exploitation movies in the 70s. Cooley High was basically, it was about a young brother that was, you know, grew up in, you know, in the hood and wanted to be a writer and winds up going to Hollywood. It's just.
I am going to give myself away as hopelessly vapid and shallow, but you must remember that once upon a time in this house, we were raising teenagers. What was that movie about the fiercely competitive cheerleader groups? The one group of
Bring It On,
perky white girls
and the sisters from Compton,
right? Yeah, Bring It On, was it?
That would be Bring It On. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just sorry. Sorry.
No. Cooley High. You have to pour some on the corner for the brothers that are not here with us anymore. And you know who that came from? It's Todd. Because that was the first time.
I'm just gonna step away and let you Hung Like Jesus and Todd take the rest of the show. Okay. Marty just sent in Uptown Saturday Night.
Uptown Saturday Night before we hated Bill Cosby. Uptown Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, was the sequel to Uptown Saturday Night. And then there was the third movie that they did, A Piece of the Action. There was also Buck and the Preacher with Sidney Poitier, Ruby Dee, and Harry Belafonte. I mean, oh, God. God, yes. Yes.
And what was the Eddie Murphy movie? Prison, Louisiana.
Life.
Yeah, yeah.
One word, life. Yeah. And that was Eddie Murphy.
I loved. Hard to say loved, but you know, it had a hell of an ending.
Yeah, the ending was amazing. Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence. Bernie Mac, God, just a who's who in, you know, black comedy. And then, of course, there's the ultimate, when you have three generations of black comics, Harlem fucking Nights.
Oh, God, yes.
Todd is not playing fair. Cotton comes to Harlem.
Well, you know, you'll be interested to know that no less a white dude than Scott in San Diego just sent me an email, Cotton comes to Harlem.
Yes, Cotton comes to Harlem.
See, we can make progress here. By the way, I gotta come back for just a minute because you got a question from Ron in Raleigh.
Okay.
Could you ask Tracy, regarding Tracy's fatwa against mayonnaise, what does she put on a turkey sandwich? As far as this black man is concerned, nothing works better than turkey, whole wheat toast, and Duke's mayo.
Okay, so, see, now...
I gotta say, I'm kind of with Ron on this. I can't imagine mustarding up a turkey sandwich.
No, no. And see, not a huge turkey fan, but see, I started, you know, like you said, my fatwa against mayonnaise. But I think I told you the reason why I have, because I, when I was a kid, I used to eat mayonnaise with no issue, right? But we were so broke that, you know, there was times that you had to have, the only thing you had was bread and mayonnaise, hence mayonnaise sandwiches.
So, well, see, for my depression era parents, they were mustard sandwiches. Mayonnaise was way too uptown.
Mayonnaise sandwiches, barbecue sauce sandwiches, and mustard sandwiches. But I think, I don't know what it was about the mayonnaise, because, okay, I remember that, now don't scream, I was a child, didn't know any better. Remember, I was a child. At some point, I put mayonnaise on hot dogs.
Okay, it's nobody talking but us. Nobody's listening, Tracy. I still do that.
Wow.
Yep.
See, no. But no, and
it works.
It's true.
I was over in Beckley yesterday, and my blood sugar fell through the floor, and I had to get. Then I was right by Five Guys, so I went into Five Guys, and I got myself some fries, and I said, "Hey, can you give me a little?"
No. You're not a fucking Belgian. Did you really?
This ain't fucking Belgium. Oh, Jesus, that hurt. But yeah, I did. And it was real good. You know, of course, the trick with Five Guys fries is you've got to eat all of them, and there's a lot, even on a small, like within 15 seconds of opening the bag, or then they go to hell.
Yeah, then they go to hell. But it's, like I said, you know, I am beginning to have another, you know, there has been a mayonnaise resurgence. You know, like you said, turkey sandwiches with mayonnaise. Because you're right, you can't put mustard on a turkey sandwich.
Now, what you can do, you can do it. But again, it doesn't work with the bread. You know, a little bit of, unless you've got like a really sturdy baguette or something, you could use a little like Italian dressing. But
true.
that's just unemulsified mayonnaise. Movie. Okay. Oh yeah, I got a list here. Hung Like Jesus.
Come Back Charleston Blue.
I got Hung Like Jesus over here. Black Girl, and the classic Crooklyn.
Crooklyn, yes. Like I said, there's only two Spike Lee movies that I really enjoy. Crooklyn and Malcolm X. Yeah, everything else, not so much.
Oh, by the way.
Black Klansman. I did like Black Klansman.
You got a note from Megan in the chat room. She said, please tell Tracy that Anatole in the chat room declares his love for her every hour on the hour, every time she's on the show. You are beloved. Meanwhile, Andy the Angry Jew says, offers up, I'm going to get you, sucker.
Yes. Yes. When he had his own band following him to play his theme song.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. of course, Hollywood Shuffle.
Yes,
I mean, from the first time I saw that in the late '80s to this day, again with the lines, hoe cakes.
Okay.
Everybody love hoe cakes. Hoe got to eat too.
Mmm.
Batty.
Yes. I mean.
See, this is what we do. This is what we do to hold back the madness of what we deal with on a day in and day out basis, coming from the vomitorium that the White House has become.
Well, see, and now that we, you know, and now I feel better about the nigglets that you had on, that you presented on the show.
Oh.
Because this counterbalances. Did I say, what, nigglets?
You said that, didn't you? Yeah, okay. we'll edit that out in post-production.
We won't. Because now this shows that, you know, that there are good black people in the world and good. Great black culture, because you know, you have to, you know, we have to balance these things out, thank God. But it's just that, you know, like I said, there's only so much I can take, and like I said, just like, you know, I know there's stupid black people in the world, because there's stupid people in every shape, form, fashion, hue, and everything. It's just that I'm just not used to hearing about so many of them at one time on your show. And like I said, Kim.
Well, there
like,
was, it, know, I'm sorry. It just worked out that way. There's a little parade this evening.
It's just like I said.
But you know what? If I was Pastor Gray, I'd be a little bit worried. I just laid down 200 large for a Lamborghini, and I get this stinking watch.
Right. It's the T-shirt. My mommy and daddy went to Vegas or whatever, and all I got was a stupid T-shirt. You know, come on, an 8 grand. She stiffed his ass. You know, maybe she's doing something on the back end. Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, you should see the picture.
Ooh.
I mean,
you gotta send this to me.
Well, if you go to Raw Story, you'll find it.
What's the guy's name again?
Pastor John Gray of Relentless Church.
Relentless Church, you relentless motherfucker! You.
And she is absolutely beautiful, and she's wearing this purple and silver glitter gown that's almost as big around as fucking Scarlett's hoop skirt, and it's you know off one shoulder with like sequins and purple and. Just gorgeous. And dudes over there in a tux, and they're standing in front of this flower arrangement that looks like they're, you know, junior high prom, and Lamborghini. And by the way, Ron tells me that when it comes time to have that Lamborghini serviced, he's going to have to take it, and you got to hope it's running, okay? I mean, if it breaks down, screwed. Because that car is going to have to go all the way to Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Lamborghini dealer is.
Good. Well, on that note, I'm going to get off the phone so you guys can. There's other people that I want to talk to, and I'm going to throw out a $25 challenge, just you know, in honor of Black Cinema, Tracy's Black Cinema Challenge.
All right, let's see. The TBCC, Tracy's Black Cinema Challenge, $25. And, you know, by the way, let me update here before you do go. Thank you very kindly to Cynthia. Cynthia said, Merry Christmas. Damn it, wish I could send more, but you know how it is. I do. And she says, and you're right, I'd never want to go to heaven with that old windbag Falwell there. Besides, heaven sounds like one boring place. Oh, and I wish I could have attended and tried your barbecue at the Malloy Shindig in Georgia recently. I bet it was great. Now that sounds like heaven, says Cynthia. In California. Thank you, Cynthia. So that took us down to 45 to go. And Charlene just took us down to 25 to go. You got a $25 challenge. So that means Robert's challenge has been met. We are on the clock with Gary and Gaia's and yours. So we got $75. And that'll go a long way. And that would even That would take us down to only $252 to come even with the middle of the week. So that's real progress. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so very much. And listen, I will try never to do what I did to you this evening again, because I could not stand the idea that I had caused you to have a full-on conniption in the middle of the 6 and 7/8.
I appreciate my love.
Well, I try to be a decent human being like that.
Bye.
Later, Tracy. Bye. Oh, God. Really, this is what saves my sanity. And I hope it helps yours a little bit, too. Because, well, dadgummit, you sit and you pay it, and you know, we're little news junkies in this community. I know we are. We can acknowledge what we are. And we just have to push, you know, we got to keep some of that shit at bay. And look, it's going to be there for us to talk about it, and we're going to talk about it in the next hour and 15 minutes. By the way, hey, Tracy, Clarence says, here's my list. Come Back, Charleston Blues, The Learning Tree, Sweet, Sweet Back, Badass Song, and Buckin' the Preacher. And Irish Dave asks, but did they do the right thing? Oh, there's another, yeah. By the way, Renee in D.C. wants Tracy to know, hey, Tracy, I get more than ashy ankles and use a leg worth of lotions to take care of my ashy business, a.k.a. the Gray Ghost. And I will, thank you, Renee. We'll sort that out at some point. And I had a note from Scary Jerry, Florida way. A lovely, lovely, lovely photograph of, let's just say, some flowers. Lovely, lovely flowers. And it was accompanied by the following note. Subject line, Horn Victory Garden. Scary Jerry says, since I started listening to the horn, I've fantasized about starting a victory garden. This year I did. I work on this garden furtively during the hours of 6 to 8 Eastern Standard Time. All of the CO2 from laughing and crying and yelling Jesus fucking Christ has entered this garden and built it up. Because, you know, plants love the CO2. Don't show this to anybody in Cali or Oregon or Washington. They'll laugh at me. However, for every time Drumpf says or does some stupid thing, I plant a seed or cut a bud. This has kept me remarkably sane. All hail holy marijuana. She will save the world and eat the carbon. And by the way, and this deserves, look, credit where credit's due. Big ups, and it pains me to say this, to Coca Mitch McConnell for clearing the barricades into industrial hemp. Not just in Kentucky, but in the, well, it's in the farm bill. Industrial hemp is okay now. Believe that, yeah. Scary Jerry says, I'm still going to conduct incantations to remove him in 2020, but hemp will save the world. Peace and love, Bob. Peace, health, and happiness to all the Hornedonistas. Scar. Scary Jerry. Wow, that's awesome. Thanks for that. Again, that perks me up a little bit. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, Heather. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Well, somebody was asking me what the hell is wrong with politics.
Yeah, that's a 12-hour show.
Oh, yeah, that's 12 hours for sure. But let me tell you, I would just have this person listen to the pastors, or every Wednesday night, I would make them listen to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. That is part of what's wrong, but, you know. But, I mean, I can't believe some of these people believe some of this crap. Now, what was it, the hilarious? Hillary was a Babylonian whore.
Oh, the whore. The whore, the whore of Babylon. Yes.
Yes. I think I put that on the horn page, but oh my God, I about died laughing when I saw that and read that. I'm like, what the hell? You're in the Babylonian whore. But, you know, I just can't understand why some of these people just get so in, how they get so, how do you say this? How they get so brainwashed by some of these people. It just, I don't know. I'm not that stupid, which I'm completely fine with, or I like fat, which could be both.
Well, but, you know, you got to remember what the late Ronald Wilson, old 666 Reagan said.
Well, facts are stupid things.
Oh, Ronnie.
Yep. Facts are stupid things.
Ronnie, I'm glad you're gone. Oh, because after last week, oh my God. And then what was it? Yesterday? You probably talked about this on your show, and I probably should have listened. But Pelosi. I don't know why there are people who don't want her to be leader. After yesterday,
she's the closest thing this country has to an actual legitimate leader.
Yeah, I'd say so. I was pleased. I was glad that she was trying to talk some sense into him. But it just, it's like, I cannot believe that he's, now, does he believe his own lies? Because that's another question I got, and it's way beyond the point, but. Jeez,
oh,
Pete, what the heck?
Well, he's, for instance, today in the wake of the sentencing of Michael Cohen and everything that Michael Cohen said in open court and the findings that were made by an Article III sitting federal lifetime-appointed judge, he is described as seething in silence in the White House. Occasionally screaming at the television, he's a liar, he's a liar.
Oh, everybody was waiting for a tweet storm.
I think they probably had to shoot him in the neck with a Haldol dart.
Well, unfortunately, you might be right. And I even told somebody who is a Republican, unfortunately. We don't always see everything the same way. But I said, you know, I don't care what comes out of this. I said, all I want to know is the truth, and I think the country deserves it after all this
crap.
I told her that, and she just said, I actually agree. And I'm like, holy crap. You get it. Good God, you actually get it now. After how long have I been trying to tell you? But I was surprised. And I was really, really pleased. So maybe she's trying to figure out that, or because she is somebody who is a Republican, I think she's going to end up bucking what her brother and her family think, which would be real good, because her brother and the rest of her family are just, ew, Republicans, you can only vote that way, you can only vote that way, you can only vote that way. Well, guess what? quit doing that.
Yeah.
And start paying attention to what the hell's going on. But like I said, I think she's starting to get it. And I'd be so proud if she would support some of my, I kid you not, some of my habit of, you know, thinking about, well, would support the fact that not everybody's going to think the way, or you don't have to think the way you were raised to think. Because believe me, the way you were raised to think, if you look at that now, you'd say, oh, shit, no. So.
I know.
But I'm starting to figure out my stepmother may not be as crazy as I thought, which is good, but I wish my dad was still here. I think that we would both be so proud of her for changing the way, you know. But it's weird because I even think now that, oh, God, if my dad saw this, he'd shit. And that's not, I mean, and that's just minor for me to say that because he'd be having a fit. He'd say, what the heck happened to my country? We have to have immigrants. We have to do this. We have to do that. We have to have library funding. We have to have, you know, just all kinds of stuff that the Republicans don't want. And there's no way in hell he'd want a wall. He would definitely say there's no way in hell that can happen because I was taught different, I was raised different. So, you know, there's, but, you know, but I guess I'm proud of my sanity. Sometimes I don't have that, but, you know.
Well, look, if you've got it, hang on to it for all you're worth. Because Heather, it's still going to be, we thought this was ugly. And I know, little ray of fucking sunshine that I am. But 18 was nasty. We got no, it's going to be hot come 2020.
Oh yeah, it's and I was.
You know, every presidential election year is the most important election in our lifetime. This will be. But the other side of it is the way things are beginning. Maybe it's me, but things feel a little bit more. It feels like things are moving a little bit more rapidly all of a sudden. The guilty plea today the sentencing of Michael Cohen today was very telling because, like I said, something happened there that really, really means something. And that was the finding by the judge, the announcement by the judge, that Donald Trump directed felonious conduct. So, essentially, from the bench, an Article 3 district judge of the federal court system declared that Donald Trump engaged in at least two felonies. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a matter that, and by virtue of being included in the sentencing order for Michael Cohen, that's a matter of fact now. That's not a matter of surmise. Okay, now, if Donald Trump were to be tried on it, he would still be entitled to the presumption of innocence, and he would have to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But that simple statement is, in many ways, enough for the House to act on all by itself in an impeachment proceeding, and in order to vote to acquit, which they would do, the Republican senators would have to pretend it did not exist. It exists. It's real.
Oh, who the heck was it? There was somebody. I was doing something earlier, and somebody posted something about, I guess it was Hatch. who was saying, I kid you not, oh, anything can be a crime nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, he didn't. He gave his farewell speech in the Senate today, and everybody just laughed.
Oh, jeez.
Because he's just a he's just a nasty old crank.
Yeah. But I sat there and I thought, oh, jeez, this man's totally lost it. But, yeah, and also, not only did Cohen plead guilty, but I'm also hearing that Pecker's cooperating.
Yeah, American Media Inc., the overarching organization that runs the National Enquirer, cut a deal to cooperate and testify truthfully in exchange for not being prosecuted, specifically in regard to the payoffs related to not Stormy Daniels, but Karen McDougal.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that her name?
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I heard that. I was listening to Nicole Sandler, and she was talking to Jackie Scheckner, and it's like, oh, my God, this is... yes, it is happening fast. Yes, it's real. How much deeper is this going to get?
Well, I mean, and that's all Southern District of New York stuff. He can fire Mueller till hell freezes over, and he will not touch that prosecution. Because the Southern District of New York prosecution is not Mueller. But
right.
But the Southern District of New York office noted AMI further admitted that its principal purpose in making the payment to Karen McDougal was to suppress the woman's story so as to prevent it from influencing the election.
Mm-hmm.
They specifically stated that the payment was made, quote, in order to ensure that the woman did not publicize the damaging allegations about the candidate before the 2016 presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Donald Trump, you could say, has been fingered by a pecker.
Oh, boy, has he. Oh, boy, has he.
So
things ain't looking too good for him, but, you know.
Well, and he was super quiet today. There was no glad handing. There was no joshing around. There was nothing at the bill signing that he went to today. An African-American man stood up and talked. Maybe that's why. He just disappeared. He just left after it. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think I think Irish Dave's thinking of a different sex worker or model or what. I thought the story was that Playmate Karen M was knocked up by some other dude. No, that's another. Yeah, and the other dude was the former treasurer of the RNC. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, Heather, it's been lovely talking to you, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Alrighty, have a great night.
And happy holidays to you.
Oh, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And here we are, 3 minutes past the hour, and we've got a $50 challenge and a $25 challenge to finish out. $75, so 10 people at $7.50, 77.5 people at $10. But that's where we are, and if we'll be getting close to finishing or getting up to even with the week, if we can do that. That's Tracy's Black Cinema Challenge and Gary and Gaia's challenge. So, well, it's nice when we got folks willing to double your money and help keep this all on the air. This is not me crawling up on the cross or anything, but I blew off Cheap Blood Work Wednesday in favor of, bill paying. because, yeah. But that's you know, that ain't that. Nothing special about that. That's the way a whole lot of us are living in this country. Just a fact. Hey, look, it's our buddy, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan over on the Skype line. Hey, Steve.
And his mama cried. If there's one thing that he don't need is another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto.
Thank you.
What's
thank
going
you
on, Bob?
Thank you very much.
Now, did Elvis write that song? I don't think he did.
No.
Who was that? Hoyt Axton?
You're going to make me look it up, aren't you?
No, you don't have to. I can sit here. I can get it real quick. But
I can, too. You want to race?
Nah, go ahead. You're faster.
Okay, first thing comes up is the...
I know I can't touch Scott and his Burl
Ives. Mac Davis.
Oh, yeah, another great songwriter. Gosh, that guy was so talented. I don't know if you remember his variety show or not, but he could go around and tell people just to give him a one-sentence phrase, and he could just make a song up on the spot.
Yeah, I was kind of a kid, but yeah, I remember the Mac Davis show.
But music is such a nasty business, and that's one of the reasons why I called. And not like unlike Scott, that is why I called. You know, I wanted to discuss the and thank our goddess Tracy out there for recommending 20 Feet from Stardom. Have you had a chance to check it out?
I have not yet, but it's on the list. That's probably this weekend.
Mary Clayton is amazing, Bob. I mean, she redefined rock and roll, and it's one of those voices that is so understated, and she's never going to get the compensation she deserves. And to me, that's sad. I mean... She's that standalone voice in Give Me Shelter. Without her, that song, it wouldn't have went anywhere, in my opinion. And she, go ahead.
It goes all the way to the insides of your bones, in her vocal in that, yeah.
And the way that went down, they woke her up in the middle of the night, sent a car out, she just wrapped a robe around, and she still had curlers in her hair and went out, and they just had her do it, boom, on the spot. And to have that much talent and to bring that much and to change the way that we listen to rock and roll, if you watch that movie, it'll floor you. And she has done everything. She sung backup on Sweet Home Alabama, which I don't want to get into that song because I don't want to let the toothpaste out of the tube. Whatever you think of it, she agreed to sing backup on it. You know, she has sung with everybody, with the likes of Tori Amos. She was the first acid queen on the Whores Tommy tour of 1972. I mean, you name it, she's done it. This woman changed the way we listen to rock and roll music. So much so, it had me go out and go to Amazon Prime and buy her solo album. It'll be here tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Well, you bought vinyl?
No. I couldn't. I got a vinyl player, but I don't think it even works. I got it on CD. I'm just such a habit of saying vinyl. But and the opening song, she retorts and she does a cover of Southern Man is the opening song. Which I don't know. It's kind of like a back and forth between Sweet Home Alabama but I don't want to get into any of that. And to quote my friend Scott, that's not why I called, but it's just really cool, you know. And I was able to listen to the cover, and she just rips it a new ass, man.
This is not why you called, but I have to ask, were you able to check out Washington Journal this morning? Do you have a report?
Yeah, the rubes are going crazy, but they only did a half hour of open phones. And then they brought in two guys that tried to do both ciderisms. To try to, you know, smooth the waters. But, yeah, it was off the hook. and I almost texted you and said, Bob, it's off the hook. But then I heard it's only a half hour. I was like, no, I'm not going to bother him. Yeah, you know, why? What's the point?
Well, I know something momentous did happen today in American broadcasting. Let's see if you can spot it. I'll get it rolling here.
Pompeo to the line of succession in this.
This is Dick Durbin speaking on that MSNBC program this morning. Okay.
It's a monarchy in Saudi Arabia. I think that is at the heart of the position being taken by Secretary Pompeo. He is worrisome that if it all trails lead to the crown prince, there could be a change of power in Saudi Arabia, and we're not certain which direction to be headed to. It is that uncertainty that probably leads him to this conclusion, a conclusion that is not supported by the intelligence evidence from the very agency that he used to head just weeks ago.
So, Joe, I have to ask, because I don't think I can't think of anyone here who could put it more clearly than you. I understand that Donald Trump doesn't care. Heilman makes a good point. He doesn't care. But why doesn't Mike Pompeo care right now? Are the pathetic deflections that we just heard when he appeared on Fox and Friends, is that a patriot speaking or a wannabe dictator's butt boy? Dead serious, I'm asking, are these the words of a patriot?
He's debased himself. He once again is undercut.
That's right. American broadcast history was made today when Mika Brzezinski used the word butt boy.
Butt boy.
to Some describe the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who, I might add, graduated first in his class at West Point. Butt boy.
What a sad state we're in.
I have a feeling that's going to stick, Steve. Secretary of State Mike Butt Boy Pompeo.
God bless Mika, huh?
But did you notice they tried to hit the delay button, but they got there too late?
Too late. Then I wonder if you went back and watched the rebroadcast, which you can, if they did take it out. Curious to know.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe somebody in the research department can take that on.
Maybe our staff on crack or crack staff can do that for us.
Staff on crack. Yeah, I saw what you did there. I heard what you did there. But of all the goofy, we missed a story yesterday. And what a story it was, Steve.
Well, no wonder we had so many diversions. I mean, that circus act with the, you know, the Nancy.
But I love sharing stories. I love sharing stories with you like this when we're talking because it's more than just my take on things. It brings another good mind to bear. So yesterday in the Congress. They had a hearing in which Google CEO Sundar Pichai,
I've seen that, yeah,
testified because butthurt Republicans. That's two uses of the word butt in 5 minutes. Well, we're rolling now.
You got the wrong platform. I know where you're going with this, and I didn't mean to spoil it.
That's okay. the Republicans butt hurt because they think that somehow the Google is silencing conservative voices. Of course, you know, by conservative voices, we mean the fucking Klan and the neo-Nazis. But there was a moment. Oh, such a moment. Let's see if the audio does it justice, shall we?
Please.
Right now, if you Google the word idiot under images, a picture of Donald Trump comes up. I just did that. How would that happen? How does search work so that that would occur?
God bless Zoe Lofgren of California. She didn't have to ask that question. She could have asked that question generically, but she made sure to point out that Google the word idiot and you get Donald Trump.
We provide search today for any time you type in a keyword. We, as Google, we have crawled, we've gone out and crawled and stored copies of billions of web pages in our index, and we take the keyword and match it against web pages and rank them based on over 200 signals, things like relevance, freshness, popularity, how other people are using it. And based on that, you know, at any given time, we try to rank and find the best results for that query. And then we evaluate them with external raters to make sure that, and they evaluate it to objective guidelines. And that's how we make sure the process is working.
So it's not some little man sitting behind the curtain figuring out what we're going to show the user. It's basically a compilation of what users are generating and trying to sort through that information.
Last year, we served over 3 trillion searches. And just as a fact, every single day, 15% of the searches Google sees, we have never seen them before. So this is working at scale, and you know we don't manually intervene on any.
So there was that part.
Classic. And while you were playing that, I Googled idiot. Guess who popped up?
Oh, I know. I did it yesterday.
it still holds true today.
But the, and so they didn't go and fix it. But then it was a total circus because. Among other people sitting on that panel was Steve King, the most notorious and out white supremacist in the Congress. And he was all pissed off. But then, well, his Steve Cantaloupe's King's partner, Louis Asparagus Gohmert got mad at him for partnering with the Southern Poverty Law Center as part of its Trusted Flagger program. Because they're good at spotting hate speech.
They just don't have a clue how this works, do they? Not a clue.
And then Steve Cantaloupe's King. Demanded to know the actual name of the person who wrote the algorithms that creates all this anti-conservative bias.
You don't write algorithms, they write themselves. Jesus. These people are so stupid, man.
And he said, well, we don't know. This is Steve Cantaloupe's King. We don't know what their social media looks like. But we do know that people that come from that county, Santa Clara County, where Google is, are about 80% supporters of Hillary Clinton. So that would be a built-in bias if I know people from California and know their politics from California. And I think I do. And then, but it gets better, Steve. It gets ever so much better. Because Steve Cantaloupe's King then asked... Mr. Pichai, how is it that my 7-year-old granddaughter wound up seeing a photograph of me accompanied by inappropriate language pop up on her iPhone during the midterm campaign?
Sir, that's not our platform.
Yeah, this is beautiful.
I'm going to make this point, and I believe I've made it with a number of the internet companies that have been sitting here at this table in the past. What we're met with situation here is that there's a very strong conviction on this side of the aisle that the algorithms are written with a bias against conservatives. The people on the other side don't agree with that because, of course, it benefits them. But what we don't know are, who are these 1,000 people? And we don't know...
Time the hell out. The people on the other side don't agree with it because it's not true, not because it benefits them. Jesus.
What their social media looks like. But we do know that the people that come from that county are about 80% supporters of Hillary Clinton, if I listen to the gentlelady from California correctly. And so that would be a built-in bias if I know people from California and know their politics from California, and I think I do. So we've got, at least theoretically, a built-in bias that's here. It's not being examined. We're not examining the social media. How would you expect that you could get to an objective result, which you said that, we build our products in a neutral way, but that doesn't mean that your product comes out neutral. So how would you expect to get to unbiased result with a built-in formula that I've described that I don't think you object to or disagree with.
Congressman, it's an important question, but the way we rank our results is essentially based on user feedback, and that's what drives the iterative loop in our, in what we put in. So
I do understand how it's prioritized that way, and I watch what's going on.
No, he doesn't.
But I made this point that
he don't have a clue.
If we don't know who the 1,000 are, and we can't look at their social media, and we can't see the algorithms to understand the results of the work they're doing behind closed doors, and yet the public believes that it's an open forum where there's a balanced exchange of open access for information. Of course, it's not. And so I have said we either need to know who they are and look at their social media, and if that doesn't solve this problem, next step then is publish the algorithms. If that doesn't happen, then the next step on the line is Section 230. The amendments to Section 230. And the step on the line beyond that is a Teddy Roosevelt step.
The Teddy Roosevelt step? Was that one of the hip and happening new dances of 1904?
Is that up there with the Watusi?
Is it the Rough Rider? And do we want to even look that up in the Urban Dictionary?
I'll Google it. Hold on.
And I love, and Irish Dave caught this too, Steve. I love how he says the Al Gore rhythm.
Al Gore rhythm. I haven't heard so much stupidity since Ted Stevens says the internet was a series of tubes.
Not a big truck.
Yeah. You're taking digital binary technology and trying to convert it to analog tubes, you know. That was just beyond the pale. And he's been dead since 2010, but that's the last time I've heard such stupidity.
Oh, Jesus, I know. And Brother Deacon Asa, who is in fact scary smart, says, yeah, let's say for the sake of argument that Google's algorithm is biased. What the fuck is it any of the government's fucking business to dictate what Google's point of view should be? Google's a private corporation. Freedom of speech, motherfucker.
But remember, there's a man behind the curtain. Every search that you do, he's back there pointing you in the right direction.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know. Maybe there is a conspiracy. Maybe henceforward, when you type in idiot, you should get a picture of Steve Cantaloupe's king. Oh, wait, no. That's what you get if you type in fucking Klansman. Klansman. No, you type in white supremacist in Congress, you get Steve King.
Well, let's try it.
Oh, we've got, by the way, we've got, it doesn't happen that way, I doubt it. It should. But just had a note coming from Brian about In the Ghetto. To share a little music history, Mac Davis first took the song to Sammy Davis Jr. Sammy felt he was so much in the civil rights movement that he didn't feel comfortable enough to record it. So Sammy told Mac to take it to Elvis and he'd record it. The rest is history.
Well, that's really cool. I remember Cartman singing it on South Park. That version always cracked me up.
Oh, no. No, really? There's a Cartman version of it?
Yes. Yes.
And there's a Cartman version of Take on Me, too, isn't there?
And Styx, Come Sail Away.
Oh, Jesus, God. Yes, there is. Meanwhile, Earther says, Steve, everybody knows that all searches on Google reaches the chief search operator, which happens to be George Soros. Soros then types the answer in his keyboard using both index fingers and sends it off. How do you think he's lived so long, Bob? To send the billions of searches each day, Soros is moving so close to the speed of light that time is almost frozen for him.
Not bad for an old man, huh?
And Lee in New York, echoing Irish Dave, says, don't you know that algorithm was the term coined to honor the inventor of the internet?
Well, of course.
Yeah, you guys are too good. I mean, this is.
Did you watch the whole hearing? I mean, is it all that rich? Maybe something I need.
Only
to
when the
well, watch.
I mean, the Zoe Lofgren thing was pretty good, but yeah. Mostly if you go out and look for it, you want to watch the Steve King, the Steve Cantaloupe's King part, and the Louis Asparagus Gohmert part.
Did Dewey Gohmert get reelected? I'm afraid to ask.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
pretty safe.
That district is gerrymandered specifically for him.
That is one stupid motherfucker, and I'm not afraid to go on record and say that either.
Oh, and by the way, according to Lou Dobbs, the Michael Cohen sentence. You're gonna love this.
Too harsh.
And what you are articulating is precisely why I raised my concern about the use of the word implicate as to the president, because implicate him in what? In what role? And how could Michael Cohen have any such presumption that he could do so? Only at the behest, as you noted, of the special counsel in the Southern District of New York. Would he be asked to do so? It's showing you what if I'm going to go down a legal rat hole with anyone, I want it to be with your guidance, I assure you, Andy McCarthy. But this is such a straightforward, to me, as a layman, it is such a straightforward, preposterous, absurd, and I think villainous.
Only they didn't have the sound effects, Steve. When they said villainous, someone should have said,
or the old dun 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 sting, you know.
Or, you know, I'll get you, he and your little and your little Slovenian wife too.
Attempt on the part of prosecutors in the Southern District, the Mueller team, perhaps as well the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. We know that the Attorney General of New York is now going to join in of what is a mob rule in our Justice Department. It's
mob rule. That's what it is, mob rule. When, curiously enough, that doesn't even remotely approach the, you know, definition of mob rule. Funny that. They're not so good with
technology.
Language. The brain thing, thinking. No. God almighty.
I'm still trying to figure out where I can get my new smocking gun, you know.
Well, yeah, I think maybe you could get it over at that store where you can get your opioids and your ammunition and your smocking gun all at the same time. You mean they're not carrying it yet?
Oh, we had a ball in the chat room last night with that. Everybody was coming up with like smock on the water and smocking in the boys' room. Everybody, anything we could find related to the word smoke.
Smock gets in your eyes.
Smock gets in your eyes. Oh, they were killing me last night, man. It was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So I encourage anyone out there listening, jump into the chat room. You won't be disappointed.
By the way, we've got an update on George Soros' Google search operator, courtesy of Michael and Madison. Are we sure Soros uses a keyboard? I'm picturing him patching through all the Google search results like an old-timey phone operator. There are probably some reel-to-reel data tapes involved in the process, too. Now, see, I thought Michael was going to go in a different direction, Steve. I thought he was going to say that George Soros is a Mentat from Dune, you know, with the purple stained lips and the humongous eyebrows, and you know, he just thinks the search results into the internet.
He's comparing her to Midge on Miss Maisel, you know, pulling out cables and connecting calls.
Yeah, exactly that. I will connect you.
Oh, that's rich. That is rich.
We got it. And, you know, what a ride this is going to be. And by the way, so since I've got you here, I'll bounce this off of you. I was doing some thinking today.
That's scary.
Yeah, I know. I try to avoid it. Usually there's a headache involved and steam and, you know, sirens and klaxons.
Coming out of your ears.
But I got, because I'm reading all this stuff about how Pence may be replaced by Nimrata Haley. You know, the woman who got fished into thinking that she was talking to the president of Poland when she was actually talking to the Moscow 98.1, the morning zoo crew. The vulgar boatman. But you know, he was so weird yesterday. I saw one meme of him repurposed from yesterday's meeting as the elf on the shelf.
My God, he just looked like he... was stoned or something.
I was surprised nobody reached over and took his pulse. But here's the there's a real problem here. If you look at the Nixon history, and I know Scott in San Diego, for instance, is very good at this. Everything that Spiro Agnew was charged with was stuff that he had done before he became vice president. And so part of the deal was that he was going to plead guilty and he'd resign as vice president. But I got to thinking, well, yeah, how did Gerald Ford actually become Nixon's vice president? And he had to maintain the fiction that he didn't get the job specifically because he promised Nixon a pardon, because that would have been kind of dirty, maybe even unconstitutional.
Nixon appointed him, didn't he?
Well, yeah, but it's not as simple as that.
I was riding in the car with my mom and dad coming back from Virginia when the news broke. I remember it vividly. Yeah, he was appointed.
But it's not as simple as that. And this is where it gets complicated for Julius Geiser. Because if something should happen, and this is all just by pure rank speculation. Oh, by the way, thank you, Renee, for jumping in on Tracy's challenge. That means there's $15 left to Tracy's challenge. And then $50 left of Gary and Gaia's, which would be a tremendous, tremendous help. Wait, real quick. Michael says, Bob, you're half right. He pulls and plugs all those patches with his mind. It's telekinesis. That's the only way to keep up. Ooh, this is getting better all the time. And, you know, if I had somebody who could sing the female part with me, well, no, not the female part. We have a new version, courtesy of Michael and Madison.
Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Of Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yep.
And it is so suited to this program, it's not even funny. But it is funny. It's hilarious. I don't want to spoil it in case, by some miracle,
to pull it. Yep.
Maybe I can get Agnes to cooperate or something. Or,
have you heard the version where the man and the woman switch parts?
No, I haven't. But yeah. let's go back to this this vice president thing real quick.
Yep.
I keep not being able to forget, which is different from remembering. The fact that Donald Trump was all set to name his running mate, but then Paul Manafort, convicted felon, chose Mike Pence. So there's just something inside me that says, there's something dirty on Pence, too. And by the way, when we the business with the Apostolic Creed, Steve, yeah, Mike Pence wasn't doing it either. If Daddy doesn't do it, Sonny doesn't.
And he was a talk show host, wasn't he? A conservative talk show host, yeah.
Yeah, and graduate of law school, all that stuff. But he's also, you know, I think he's a Baptist of some kind, and Baptists don't go in for that popery.
That ought to give you hope, Bob. You could be vice president.
Oh, no, thank you. So I keep thinking there's probably something dirty about Pence. So if Pence were to say pre-exit Trump, then Donald Trump and it also made sense when I started thinking about that story a few weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, about Trump shuffling around the White House asking anybody who'll stop and listen, do you think I can trust Mike Pence? Do you think I can trust Mike Pence? Can Mike Pence be trusted? Well, what he's worrying about is, can he trust Mike Pence to pardon his ass?
Exactly.
Okay. But if for some reason Pence should have to exit stage right,
skedaddle because he doesn't want to go to jail,
then Donald Trump would have to appoint a replacement, which takes me back to how did Gerald Ford become vice president? Well, Gerald Ford, in order to become vice president, had to be confirmed by the Senate. Well, you say, okay, and Mitch McConnell, he also had to be confirmed by the House.
Uh-oh. I got Big Nance in charge now. That may not be so easy.
So you see, I mean, you see why the lights went on and the smoke came out of my ears.
Ding.
Because if he should happen to not be president anymore and there wasn't a vice president,
it automatically goes to Nance, doesn't it? I mean, order of succession.
Bingo.
Correct?
Bingo.
Wow. But I think we're living in dream world because I don't think the Senate, even now, would ever vote to impeach. Convict.
Well, I don't either, but what I'm having a hard time with is figuring out how you would evade specific findings by a federal court, findings of fact. I know, Steve, but it means that you would have to say that a fact found by a court was not a fact.
But it's like Birdman Orrin Hatch. He sat there and said what a great man he was, even after the reporter pointed out to him, hey, he was, you know, these criminals were all appointed by Republicans. Well, it doesn't matter. He's still a great president. And I really think that they will all fall in that line of succession. That's their mindset. As long as he maintains 30% or above, where's he at now?
Oh, shit, I think he's in the 20s.
Uh-oh. He's getting, you know, once he loses the rubes, then all bets are off. He's in the 20s?
I read that somewhere in the last couple of days, at least one poll, I guess.
Well, that changes everything then. Because they're only as loyal as they can be to keep their jobs. Right?
Yeah. Can't find a chief of staff.
No. And that's, you know, you can't tell me that a 30-year-old young man, Pence's chief of staff, wouldn't jump all over that job. But he doesn't want to go to jail. I don't fucking blame him. Do you?
I wouldn't go to jail for Donald Trump.
No, hell no.
Donald Trump knows no loyalty, so why be loyal to him?
And the only way that you will be able to get that job is to kiss his ring and swear allegiance to King Donald, which means you're going to have to lie. Therefore, ultimately, you're going to end up in the hootscow. I wouldn't take the job.
No.
Screw that.
No, I mean, look what... And see, anybody who even thinks about it only has to say one word to himself, Michael Cohen, two words, Michael Cohen. Because, you know, remember how Michael Cohen bragged that he would take a bullet for Trump?
Yep.
Well, he's not going to take a bullet for Trump.
Not so much anymore.
Instead, he's going to take 3 years in the Gray Bar Hotel for Donald Trump.
What do you say? I lived in the darkness, but I've seen the light. Hallelujah.
There we go.
The only one that comes to mind that may be stupid enough to take it, and he's not a stupid man, but it wouldn't surprise me if Fat Chris Christie didn't take the job.
He'd have to be offered it, and Jared Kushner would throw a hissy for the ages because Christie's the one who put his pappy in prison.
Yeah, I never thought about that angle. As always, you're one step ahead of me, Bob, but that's the only one that I could think that would even remotely consider taking that job. I'm sure there's others out there that don't come to mind per se, but I've been to jail, Bob. It's no fun. I wouldn't do it. Screw that. I'd shovel dirt first.
I mean, I wonder if we're going to... Well, no, I'm not going to say that. That's just too creepy. But everybody's implicated. You know, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags can't get out fast enough. I sure do hope y'all remember me for being honest and truthful and transparent.
Yeah, where is she? I seen her standing stage right during that three-way circus yesterday. But that's it. She didn't make a peep other than try to usher people out when it was over.
No.
When's she going to give another presser?
Oh, probably never. Gone at the end of the year, isn't she? But see, what I was saying about all this vice president, about all, or not all this vice presidential business, but all this business about findings by a court, that's a further reason that I remain convinced that Mitch McConnell will simply not, would simply never allow a bill of impeachment to even be tried in the Senate, period.
So it's dead in the water then. It would take me back to my original point.
Yeah.
I mean, what, the House indicts, the Senate convicts. Isn't that the way it works, to put it in layman's terms?
Yes, and the Chief Justice presides.
Right. Takes me back to the Clinton days when Rehnquist, remember he got the robe with the gold stripes and everything, man? He just thought he was king shit of Fart Mountain, you know?
Wait a minute. Yeah, king shit of Fart Mountain. We're so far into the gutter now, that had to get a cowbell. Hey, Steve, I'm going to try to take another call, man.
Yeah,
it's awesome
do,
to
Bob.
Hear. And you know, by the way, little Cletus's new haircut is just adorable.
Her do, yeah. I got it today. She insisted that I send you a picture.
I love the little bow. That was just precious. She's such a little doll.
Nice talking to you,
hey,
Bob.
You take care and give our best to Miss Karen.
I will. Take care, brother.
Bye now. Our buddy Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Yeah, Hoghead in the chat room saying, well, you know, he might not take a bullet, but Cohen might take a torpedo, a present from a rear admiral. yeah. Ba-dum-bum. Yes. Let's see. Over to the, and back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
This is Megan. How are you?
That's who I thought it was. How are you, Megan?
I'm hanging in there. I wanted to ask you if you got my tweet this morning, and then you mentioned the clip already with Steve.
Yes.
So you did?
Yeah, that was magic.
I was going to ask you if you saw your dirty little habit this morning, because I'm usually asleep around that time. But, yeah, I must have missed that. I had to see it on Twitter, and I couldn't believe my eyes.
Well, I'd just love to know.
Are we going to?
I mean, I'm surprised she didn't just faint. Mika must be a tougher, more coarse lady than we ever suspected.
It's coming out like slowly but surely. She doesn't sound like she's enamored of this administration much anymore.
She and Joe did so much to create it. Maybe they're trying to undo their bad deeds.
Well, there's one program that in particular that I couldn't watch. I'd changed channel because they started going on about President Bill Clinton was responsible for Trump. And I just, my head started to hurt, so I had to turn it off at that point. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I hear something like that. I hear something like that in the morning, and well, the swirly straw's going in the tequila bottle quick.
Oh my God! Well, I am noticing that there seem to be a lot of specials out now regarding relationships between presidents and the FBI, and they're doing a special about the impeachment of Bill Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky thing, and I'm like, interesting coincidence now that all this stuff with Vault 45 is going down. And I'm sitting here like, well, I was in high school with the Bill Clinton stuff. And I vaguely remember, like, I didn't really start paying real attention to politics till I was old enough to vote, which was, like, around the time of Bush Jr.'s presidency. But I remember enough to know that the whole thing with Monica Lewinsky, I felt, was a lot of Republican BS trying to sink him because they didn't like he was popular.
Yeah, right. But, you know.
So I'm just correct in thinking that, or?
I don't think that's entirely impossible. But, look, The Republicans are just, they're a rump white grievance party. That's all that's left of them. They got no policy. They got no ideas. They got nothing except grievance.
Well, it just seems like they're specifically in government just to screw it up, which, you know, it's a lot easier if you're trying to throw a monkey wrench into the end of the proceedings. If you're trying to mess it up, then it's a lot easier. When we talk about, you know, how the Republicans seem to get, you know, their stuff done easier. And that's always been my opinion. And if, you know, if it's easier to try and screw it up, and it's easier to get, you know, people to do it if that's what you're trying to do, than it is to actually, like, conceive of something and build something and make it work.
Well, it's hard to make government work when you don't believe in it in the first place.
Well, and that's the part that always makes me bare my teeth, Bob, because honest to God, I don't know how Paul Ryan got into his position, for example, but he always seems to be the poster child for the man who's, like, anti-government, and he didn't work in the private sector all that long. He's been in government most of all of his freaking working career. He's had, you know, government health care, God knows what else. He's basically lived off the benefits of the government, and he's going around trashing it. And I feel like sitting his butt down saying, look, buddy, here in the private sector, if you trash your employer, you can expect to get fired. So they're going around doing this mess, and I'm like, well, yeah. It's like they really truly don't understand how they appear to, I want to say, the working class, or at least the working class that doesn't get all the coverage of, you know, Trump supporters that's been done in the last 2 years. But it's like they really have no conception or understanding of how we, I want to say, rubes, you know, what we have to deal with in the real world.
Right.
I'm just like, it boggles the mind. It's like, I'm not that far from D.C., but I'm sitting here like, buddy, are you serious? And, you know, I hear him talk, and then he was, there was another point when people were trashing Ocasio-Cortez for, I don't know, her wardrobe and the fact she didn't have enough to live in D.C., and they were trashing her for this, and I'm sitting here like, wait a minute, this problem predates her, like, by a good many years. And, in fact, it was always been kind of baffled why we have taxpayer-funded housing for our vice president and our president and our military. Why have we not come up with, you know, housing for our congresspeople? Because otherwise you're basically setting up a system where only the rich can serve an office.
Well, I...
That's just
somewhat,
me.
I somewhat facetiously point out that that's kind of the goal.
I mean, and while they're always complaining about how they need to socialize with each other and break bread and just find out what they're like, you know, with their jackets off, and I'm like, well, that'd be a way to do it.
A great big congressional dormitory. And you know, the funny thing is, in the earliest days of Washington D.C., Megan, it was that way. You had multiple. There was very little in the way of amenities or accommodations. So you had boarding houses, and you would have congressmen, and you know, they were congressmen, sleeping three and four to a bed. No kidding.
Well, how hard would it be to get like an old hotel or something that's close to, you know, the Capitol, and you know, redo it? You basically, it's a dormitory for whoever's serving. Since they put a cap on the House of Representatives anyhow, because we're actually supposed to have 100 more than we've got. I don't know if you know that. It's supposed to be a certain percentage of the population of the country, and they just didn't have enough room to. I don't know if you. I've actually visited the Capitol, so you hear all this on a tour, which you can get through your senator or your House rep, by the way.
Oh, I've toured. I've
I don't
toured,
know how many
I've
people
toured
know
the,
that.
I've toured the basement of the Capitol Museum. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, but if you go to specifically your, if you go through your House rep or your senator, you can request a tour,
and you can visit their office, and you bypass all the lines and stuff, I don't think you have to pay, and they get an intern to basically tour you through the Capitol, and you get to see and hear quite a lot that you probably wouldn't hear otherwise.
Think about your concept for a minute. Do you really want that contentious bunch of assholes? I mean, you think colleges have troubles with their athletic dorms? Oh my God! The D.C. Capitol Police would practically live at that place. Fights be breaking out and shit like that, and it'd be mayhem.
I kind of thought about that, but honestly, Bob, at this point, I'm trying to level the playing field at trying to get our representatives so that pried loose from this. Only the rich can afford to go on these huge, expensive campaigns to get elected. And then once they're elected, how are they going to afford to live in D.C.? Because D.C. is pretty expensive. I mean, that's a no-brainer. But again, it's like they're trashing Ocasio-Cortez on this, and I'm sitting here like, well, this is not new. I mean, I read Joe Biden's biopic when, was it, some months back, and he wrote this, like, back in 07, and he was talking about this. And he had to go basically enter the Senate, it was, like, early 70s, so that's, like, what, 30-plus years ago? And he had to do it right after his family was killed, so he had money worries, and he had to start his senatorial career. And this was, what, 72? And I'm sitting here like, how are we twiddling our thumbs without...
I know.
And then you got the issue with... Well, you had the issue with them. They were all sleeping in their offices to save money because apparently the... I don't know, it was the $174K that they're all getting to serve is apparently not enough for a lot of them if they're trying to put kids through college. They're all sleeping in their offices, and now we have, you know, in the era of Me Too, if you've got all the interns and aides and staff that are coming into the office early, you come in and you see your boss in your pajamas, I mean, that's going to create a dicey situation. So, quite a few more people that are doing that than we think. Sleeping in the offices. So I'm just like, if they're going to be doing that, you might as well house them somewhere. But I don't know. It just seems kind of silly to me.
Well, there's a lot about our system of government that is anachronistic and even, dare I say, silly. But the problem is, as long as Republicans control any portion of it, there will be no improvement made. I mean, one of the things, honest to God, this is trivial as hell. One of the things I'm looking forward to with Nancy Pelosi getting back into control of the House and Democrats controlling the House is that maybe the Longworth cafeteria will be fit to eat in again.
Oh, man. I tell you, it seems like the House of Representatives is like the more colorful branch. Or at least the last time it was the 4th of July parade that I marched in with my congresswoman, she had stories. Because I think I went up to her and asked her, I said, it seems like a lot of, I think it was the Senate side, where people are either wearing gray or black. And she goes, oh, no, they wear all kinds of colors in the House of Representatives. She goes, oh, no, that's the Senate. The Senate does that. Okay. So apparently there's some, rivalry going on because she was telling me about some of the House of Representatives of some of the black women there just wear these colorful church, what is it? How does my mom put it? Sunday go-to-meeting clothes.
Yeah.
And they just wear them on the floor. And I was just like, wow, that's so cool because you don't hear stories like that often. But, yeah, she comes back with a lot of neat stories from – on that side of the Capitol. Sorry, I got off track there.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Well, Megan, you have yourself a wonderful evening. I'm glad you called in.
Thank you, Bob. You have a nice day.
All right, you too. Take care. Bye now.
All right, take care. Bye.
And so let's see. One last little thing to share. just because it's so damn funny. You know by now that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has taken up free residence inside the heads of practically every Republican in Washington, D.C. The mere mention of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will send them into spasms of conniption and having kittens with crocheted tails. Well, one of the latest of that, latest in that vein, it came from Kellyanne Conway, who recently trashed or attempted to trash Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Well, somebody on Twitter by the name of Tommy Christopher, it's at Tommy Xtofer, heard what Kellyanne Conway said and sort of ran with it. The idea being, what was Kellyanne Conway doing when she was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's age?
The nonsense has been spewed about him even recently from the left and from this 29-year-old congresswoman who doesn't seem to know much about anything.
I've got the pundit blues. I've got the pundit blues.
Now, this is Kellyanne Conway at roughly the same age as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, back when she was just Kellyanne Fitzpatrick and was appearing, and this showed up on C-SPAN too, she was appearing at some charity event, and she's wearing a short dress and feathered boa and singing the pundit blues. Okay, now that we've got the setup.
The nonsense has been spewed about him even recently from the left and from this 29-year-old congresswoman who doesn't seem to know much about anything.
I've got the pundit blues. I've got the pundit blues. All year I've kept the pace. On TV took my place. Lots of makeup on my face and sexy dress of lace. Said the president's a big disgrace. Insist Paula had a case. Chatted about the disaffected base. But now I've got the pundit blues. Kosovo now tops the news.
This was billed as DC's funniest celebrity charity event.
Only guy in my life is Chris Matthews. I've got the pundit blues. Newt left for Georgia on the midnight train. House Republicans made no gains. Lead story now is Saddam Hussein. And I don't know nothing about that, but they'll still invite me to chat. As long as I'm blonde and not too fat, I've got the pundit blues. I've got the pundit blues. Read the Star report, and all I could find is that Clinton's sex life is better than mine. With impeachment now dead and Rivera still alive. How's a lowly pundit gonna survive? On rice cakes and quotes in the Washington Times, I've got the pundit blues. Now wait just a minute. No reason to sob. I'm different from the other pundits. I have a day job.
Yeah. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez knows nothing about nothing. But Kellyanne Conway's a surefire, no kidding, brass-bound genius. Right. Ah. Yeah. Darlene in Connecticut with a note. Yeah. Her pigs are apoplectic over little old Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. What's the deal? Damn, they're afraid of her. Maybe because she speaks truth to power? Bingo! Bingo. Now all we have to do is get the AIC Act on her radar, and it could be the big boost that the justice in Appalachia so desperately needs. So that's it for the evening. Thanks, everybody, for the overnight crowd. A reminder: we've got $65 worth of challenges on the table, and I don't even know what the number is right now, but I know if we'd met the challenges, that would have knocked us down to like 287 plus the rest of the week. If that happens, that's where we'll be, I think. Deciphering is difficult on the fly. But thanks to all of you who helped keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. I can never thank you enough. Thank you for this community that you keep going, that you build. Thank you, Will. I didn't see that. I didn't get a notification. So now there's Tracy's challenge has been met, finished off by Will in Chicago, and there's only $45 left of Gary and Gaia's challenge. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little program in whatever manner you so do. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Pinch Hit Midweek Chat Room utility moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.